pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Malathi T. Krishnaswamy, an entrepreneur, a motivational speaker, a podcaster, and a mother of two. Malathi started her career as a technical sales engineer and chose to become an entrepreneur after the birth of her first child and continues to be one till date. She's been living in Germany since 2002 with her family. Having graduated as an engineer, she runs a company that provides engineering and IT services to micro, small and medium enterprises in Europe and India. In 2019, she founded another startup, Pogia Online, a socio-cultural platform that aims to help expat Indians stay connected to their roots. The platform brings together artists and art schools across Europe to bring experiences that matter from the rich Indian culture to the people of Europe. She hosts a podcast titled The Impressive Empress, where she talks to impactful Indian women leaders across the globe about their inner journey to empowerment. As a speaker, she likes to talk about all aspects of a woman's life, and her talks would focus on ways of elevating the soul to ensure a positive personal growth. Malathi supports education of girl children, providing food and clothing for the underprivileged, protecting and feeding cows, and in promoting Indian arts and culture. Listen in as Malathi shares her journey, thoughts, life. Hi Malathi, such a pleasure finally seeing you after conversations. Welcome to You and I with Rashmi Shetty.
Hi Rashmi, pleasure to be on this show. Thank you so much for having me. I'm quite excited to be having this conversation with you on You and I. Lovely name, I should say.
It's, you know, the idea behind it is each of us has our own uniqueness and individuality. So it's a punning of the letters you and I for these two words that we are trying to explore through the conversation, as much as you and I having the conversation. So that's how the name was arrived at. And I have heard so much about you from Neerja. And therefore, thanks Neerja for this reference. And before we go ahead to find out what Malathi is doing today, I would love to know what little Malathi was like. So take us through your journey.
Yes. Thanks, Neerja, for this wonderful, for having me on this show, for referring me to Rashmi. Like the name, I think it makes it, takes this conversation to a whole new personal level. We feel that instant connect, and I'm really happy that I'm here. The little Malathi, I don't think I was very different to what I am today. So I was probably good at academics. I was a good student. I was always in the top ranks. I loved math. I loved science. I wanted to be someone who would go out and make a difference to the world. I was quite aspirational. My dad had a lot of dreams for me. Not in a bad way, but definitely he saw me as someone who would go out and do it. So I come from a family of four sisters and the second. And I used to love playing athletics. I've been a captain of my school team for the basketball and tennis court. You know, I'm really sad that game doesn't exist anymore. But I loved playing that right from, you know, from whichever grades we were allowed to participate outside of the school. So the inter-school competitions, I was quite active. I would love to be on the debate shows. I was very active in the theater scene, the school theater scene. I loved being on stage, which I continue even today.
My God, maybe I should flip the question. I should ask, what did you not do?
There are many, many things. But I know about Rashmi, I've been quite lucky to have people around me who were more confident in what I can, rather than, you know, me being self-confident. I think that kind of, that's been a wonderful grace that I've had. I continue to have it even today. So that really helps, you know. So when you have someone tell you that, you know, hey, you can do this, you know, why don't you go for it? That gives you that extra boost.
Where did you grow up, Malti? Today you're in Germany. Where did you grow up?
My childhood was predominantly in Madurai, a small town. Though it was, you know, erstwhile capital of a very big kingdom. But now I think it's kind of moved to a big town. It's known as the Temple City of Tamil Nadu. So I studied, I did my schooling there. Then I moved to Chennai. And there it was, you know, a huge culture shock, I should say. When I moved from a small town to Chennai, you know, all confident girl suddenly moving to Chennai to do her university. It was like, I felt like a fish out of a pond because, you know, speaking English was one of the challenges, I should say, because in Tamil Nadu, in growing up in Madurai, we were very comfortable talking in our mother tongue, Tamil, and moving to Chennai, and it was not very easy. But then I think my upbringing had kind of helped me wade through these challenges with an open mind, I should say. You know, not getting bogged down, I kind of quickly picked up, made friends easily, and all of that kind of helped. And I did my engineering, and then...
So it was natural. A good student should do engineering. So you moved along with the flow?
Yes. But, you know, I wanted to do something different. So before engineering, I studied geology. And, you know, today we talk a lot about gender equality, gender diversity, and all of those things. But back then, we did not have any such thing. And in that course, I really loved the course. It was something so very different for women to do at the point of time. In fact, I wanted to get into mining. And all of India, there was only one university of Ghaziabad which would offer mining. But they would not take women students. So there were no admissions for girls. So the next thing for me was to join geology. I joined geology, but then I was the only girl in that entire batch of 15 students. And it so turned, I joined with a lot of passion, but it so turned out at that point of time, people who did not score very well would kind of take this course. So I did not have a good set of batchmates, very sadly. Then I had to quit. And then the following year, I took up engineering. And then, like I said, I was quite aspirational. But then, you know, life has its own twists and turns. So I had to get married early. I took up a job right after my graduation and soon after I got married. And then within a couple of years, I had my first daughter. And then, you know, that aspiration kind of never dies. You know, in those days, we did not have a place where you could leave your child and, you know, get on to work. So though I enjoyed motherhood, I do till date, I have a son also. But this aspiration in you, the fire in you never dies. You know, you always want to stoke it, feed it with whatever you want. So I had to do a lot of discussing with my husband. He was open to whatever I wanted to do. But then we took a very conscious decision, and I'm so happy that we did that family comes first. Family is number one priority, and that I would be the one who would take care. And why I'm so happy that we took that decision today is that I can proudly say that I have two lovely children who are very grounded, and who are doing quite well for themselves. So that's, I could really pat myself on the back. I'm not saying this with arrogance, but I'm saying this with a lot of joy and contentment, you know. So that's maybe...
So your kids were born and they completely grew up in Germany?
No, kids both are born in India. My daughter was born in Chennai. My son was born in Bangalore. But soon after my son was born, we moved to Germany. And that's when probably I should give a little bit before I moved to Germany. I started off on my own because, like I said, you know, we did not have the kindergarten, so we did not have the daycare centers that we have today. We didn't have it back then in the early 90s. So I decided to do something on my own. I started off, you know, talked to people, reached out to relatives, reached out to friends who could help. We were early 90s was not the day of internet. You know, it was still in a little further down in the years. But early 90s, it was still, we did not even, I mean, of course, we had the email. But that was also quite expensive. Telephones were expensive. Mobile phones were non-heard of. And the only way of communication was either go in person, talk to them on the landlines. That was also quite expensive because you had to pay by the minute. And also, or it could be the, you know, the good old way of writing a letter. But nevertheless, I reached out to people, talked about what are the possibilities for a woman who wants to do something out of her career, out of her education. So then I was once again, you know, lucky to be guided into something that I enjoyed doing from home. I slowly built up my business, but then we had to move to Bangalore and then to Germany. So like we had decided, I would take care of the family. Once we moved to Germany, it was totally a very different culture, a very different language. I did not know a single word of German, and the kids had to go to the German school. I mean, my son was still a baby. The daughter had to go to a German school, and one of those challenges came along. And I mean, I wouldn't say it was easy. For me, I loved everything about India. I still do. Who you are depends on your upbringing, depends on what you enjoy doing. I think we kind of navigate our lives, we prioritize things in our lives based on the kind of values that we pick up as child or in our teens, or you know, right, maybe up to 2021 is what frames you. Of course, we do change. I think change is the only constant in life, and we should be prepared for the change. But the core of you, I think it depends on what you enjoyed doing as a child, or what you enjoyed really in your life. So those were the things that I really liked, were celebrating the festivals.
Okay, one minute. I just wanted to take a pause here, Malti, because this is very interesting. Starting off in Madurai, then you came to Chennai, then in Bangalore, and then to Germany. The Malti of Madurai to Chennai was a culture shock, and then you found yourself. The Malti from Chennai to Bangalore was trying to get on her own, and here is Malti now packing off to Germany. Looking back, where was the shift happening, Chennai to Bangalore or Bangalore to Germany, that the Malti started shifting? Where did you find yourself? Did you find yourself, or you were not lost at all to find yourself?
Well, maybe I'll answer your last question first. Where did you find yourself? I think I found myself in Germany whether it was the shift from Madurai to Chennai to Bangalore, it was always within the same cultural sphere. Or I'm very, like I said, you know, I'm a practicing Hindu, and I love everything about our traditions and cultures. So even though the city changed, the place of residence changed, it was still the same thing. But when I moved to Germany, these were the things that were kind of not there. And when we moved to Germany, we did not even have a big Indian community. So it was, like I said, you know, it was not, we just had Skype, the beginning days of Skype, but we did not have a constant internet. Again, calling home was very expensive. And I'm a people person. I need I love talking to people. I love sharing my experiences, love listening to what they are doing and things like that. So all of this was maybe I went through a phase where I was not comfortable in, you know, wherever I was, but the life was good. You know, I shouldn't say that I did not enjoy this life also. This life is also good. You know, it gives us the best thing about living here in Germany, Rashmi, is that it gives us the freedom to do what we want to do. Language is not a barrier. Language is definitely not a barrier. You could still manage with English. And even if you don't know English, you're still fine. You can still establish yourself. And we have very good support systems for that in terms of the government providing, you know, a lot of avenues for growth and things like that. But the real you, the core of who you are, that is where I had a beating. And of course, it was, I kind of reached out to who, you know, when you go out shopping in the mall, if I see any Indian looking face, you know, Rashmi, the next minute I would be there trying to befriend them, trying to find out from where they came, what they are doing, how long they are going to be there. And, you know, we become friends. So we are still friends, you know, with people whom I made friends in the 90s. I'm still friends with them. Sorry, not 90s, 2000. So that was life. So long answer short. So yes, I found myself here. Not that I lost myself, but then you need a lot of reconnect, reinvent, and restore yourself to normalcy.
I love this. Reconnect, reinvent, and restore yourself to normalcy. Normally, what somebody who has been from this Madurai journey to Chennai, Bangalore, and Germany would have tried to reinvent herself to see how she fits in. What did you do?
Well, for me, I think I took a back seat. I was not employed. Nor did I continue my entrepreneurial journey. So family came important because we were all struggling with the language. My husband knew the language, but you know, for us communicating with others was not easy. And even within Germany, we moved from one place to another. And the constant shift was kind of also not really helping us, helping me, I should say. The kids were fine. But I took a back seat. I kind of made sure the family was enjoying their time and doing what they needed to do. So in all of this, I wanted to kind of focused on my education. I always wanted to do a master's degree, and it's a pity I haven't done it yet. Yeah. I tried looking for opportunities where I could study more and things like that. But then when you're very aspirational, Rashmi, you just want to do something. So after a few years, I think I, with the support of my family, my husband, and some good friends, I started off on my own here in 2013. So but that's not the core of me. Yes, that kind of helps. And it was not easy to start off after such a long break in a new land. A lot of learnings. I enjoy learning. I continue to learn a lot of things even today. So every day, it's a daily practice of learning. You never know what will be useful then. So I kind of say I like to collect tidbits of information. So it helps. And so that's
because sometime back you said you're a practicing Hindu, so things didn't change a lot from Madurai to Chennai to Bangalore. So yes. When you say a practicing Hindu, what is it that you were doing as a ritual every day to be a a practicing Hindu, or was there something else beyond the chanting that was part of your lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a very interesting, something that's close to my heart, Rashmi. So yes, I mean, as a daily practice, it was just the routine puja stuff that we do. Not a very elaborate one. We have a special place for the altar, and we say our daily prayers, and you know, light the lamp. Those were the things. But then I went through a very tough phase in my life where it was quite challenging for me. I think when it is 40, it's many people try to, you know, call it the midlife crisis. But I read somewhere a very interesting anecdote which says that it's a wake-up call from God. So I think in my case, it was really that kind of a wake-up call. So I'm very thankful for the grace that's been there with me. I went deeper into our practices. I now do a lot of scriptural studies formally, but back then it was like maybe 7, 8, 9 years back. It was more I went into a kind of a meditation, something like a tapas, you could call, something that you can do from the place where you are. It's just that the focus is so totally narrowed down to that one thing, which is God, which is for me was very, very transformational. And yeah, of course, I had a guru who could help me do that.
What was the result of it all, Malti? When all of this, you had your guru, you found your guru as well.
Yes, it was a life-changing experience, Rashmi, I should say. I'm so happy that I went through it. It brings, you know, if I have to say how it helped me externally. Internally, yes, it was a lot of transformation. I was able to find my core, you know, that kind of helped me launch as someone who could vocalize about women empowerment. So that's when I really launched off as a motivational speaker. And I would always, my speeches would be on the empowerment of the woman. So how I define empower is, I love acronyms. Mm-hmm. Empower, I can say it's also an acronym, which mm-hmm. I call it as embrace the woman in you, tap into the power within and emerge radiant. So that is something that it was an eye opener for me. I repeat that to myself even today. That oftentimes, you know, today everybody wants to be. When I say everybody, I'm talking about the women. We all want to achieve a lot of things. We want to be at the top and things like that. But for me, I'm sorry to say, but many women are doing this at the cost of the family, at the cost of their children. Oftentimes, there's no family. Oftentimes, there's no children. That kind of, it really bothers me because, you know, I was also part of this first ever global conference for mothers. It happened in India. I went from Germany as a German representative, along with another woman. We had to do a small study about mothers in Germany. Mm-hmm. And it was a conference attended by the mothers from 8 different countries, including India. And the findings of this conference, Rashmi, is really very worrisome for the future. We found that all over, you know, it's not just in India, even in Germany. I was surprised to find out that Germany had a joint family system. They had a joint family system where the family lived under one roof. And then slowly it moved to having families in the same street. And slowly it was in the same village or same town. But now it's in many cases, it's just not there. Yeah? And it was not just with Germany. We have this problem in other countries like Bulgaria, Georgia, India. So we have this joint family system, and then we have this nuclear family system. Now it has come to something called a nano family, where the child lives on his or her own. Can you imagine? It's called a family, It's recognized as a family. And that is something that's very, very, I mean, for me, it was very shocking. How can the child, of course, okay, maybe once you are an adult, okay, but a child living by himself or herself, what, of course, the parents probably still feel duty bound to give them the resources that the child need to grow up, like the money, the financial security and all of that. But what about the values, the sanskaras that only the parents or the grandparents can provide? That is still lacking. And that is where I would like to contribute now. And you asked me what was the shift that happened because of my practice. This is it. So it helps me. It really helped me in bringing some clarity and kind of a broader picture. It kind of helped me see or bring a broader picture of what's happening around me in the society, in the communities at large. And I really would like to contribute to that. And I started speaking to mothers about this. But then, when I start talking about values and sanskaras in this age, when I talk to mothers who are in their 20s or 30s, I don't come across as someone with a solid or sound advice for today, right? So today's women are more focused on the careers. Nothing wrong about it. We also need that. But I would advise, or I would probably say, prioritize. Once you have your children, I think the priorities have to be your child. It's just not about, you know, changing nappies or taking them to school, having a lot of extracurricular activities. What is it that you can impart? What is it that you can do to make your child unique? You know, our scriptures say mother is the first university. Yeah, the mother's lap is the first university. And sadly, Rashmi, not many mothers provide that kind of education to their value education to their children. That is quite pitiful.
Here, I'd like to ask you, Malti, there are many women who'd like to take that conscious break and focus on motherhood. But like you said, not everyone is privileged to have a support system or a community. But still, the frustration starts showing, because sometimes it's better the mother goes to work rather than show her frustration on her children who are not having a happy childhood, the purpose why she's at home. Now, for women who are confused like that, and women who are not able to do their 100% at home because they wish they were elsewhere, what would you like to tell them, especially since you consciously moved and embraced motherhood like you did?
I would like to quote Smriti Rani, who said, conflict arises when there is poverty. Conflict arises when there is illiteracy. Conflict arises when there is a race to take ownership of resources. I think women are at, not just women, I think the societies at large are conflicted because of that. I would like to add a couple of more here. Conflict arises when there is inequality. Conflict arises when there is differentiation, and conflict arises when there's a lot of negativity in the air. But when women are put at the helm of things, we have seen that conflict has this very unnatural way of decreasing, says Smriti Irani. But my question is, when women are at conflict with themselves, how can we bring a resolve to these issues? I think this is also a question from you. But I think what we need to do is the women need to find an anchor. And once again, I would probably like to share this acronym of EMPOWER. Embrace the woman in you. For a very long time, Rashmi, I searched into this word embrace very deeply. What does it mean? You know, it's not the physical embrace that we are talking about. It's a very deep rooted word which encompasses so many things. A woman has so many roles to perform, starting from being a daughter, a sister, and then she moves on to become a mother. Of course, she's a friend constantly. She becomes a mother and so many things. And then professionally, there are going to be so many things. So obviously, innately, as a woman, I think nurturing is something that comes very naturally to us. But when we want to move out to the professional career, Rashmi, somewhere we want to hide this. We want to hide this because we want to probably be seen as men, because that's when we probably think that a parity is established. No, I think we are today living in a time and space where this differentiation is appreciated. So I think we don't need to ape somebody else. We don't need to be somebody else. Someone once said, be yourself, because everybody else is already taken. Yeah. So understand who you are. At the core of it, that's what is very important. Take some time out. Do a lot of introspection. Find out who you really are. And that would help you anchor yourself. That would help you understand your role as a woman. Why is it that you are in this time and space? What do you have to do? What do you have to achieve? And once you're done with this, have a higher purpose in life, because that is what will help you remove all these conflicts. Because once you have a higher purpose in life, magic happens, Rashmi, I tell you. Somehow your entire life, both personal and professional, you will try to find ways to align towards that higher purpose in life, whatever it could be. We all need to find that purpose. A life without a purpose is like, I think there's a common saying, it is like a ship without a sail. So
yeah, you're right, because be yourself, everyone else is already taken, is Oscar Wilde. And the ship without a sail is a very common way to say when you move, rather less. But how do you find yourself? How do you connect to that higher purpose, higher self, Malti? It's a lot of introspection, like you said, but in the rigmarole of the everyday life, we are so lost with all the roles that we play and the points we want to garner, the real things that we want to prove to the external world. So anchoring oneself, getting deeper to find out who one needs to be and to connect to that higher self is quite a challenge in itself. So how do you suggest anyone who wants to get on the journey start? Where do they start and what should be the first few steps they take in order to get into that direction?
Beautiful question, Rashmi. Very beautiful question. Well, the short answer is it's not at all easy. But the truth is, if you set your mind to it, it's not just for finding a purpose in life. For anything, if we set our mind to it, somehow we will achieve it. It's just that we are not putting our mind to it. When we put our mind to it and we put our heart into it, we will find a way. And like I told you, as a practicing Hindu, I only know about Sanatana Dharma, so I can speak only about that. That has been my guiding this thing. So I first reached out to a guru, and from there the beautiful journey started for me of finding myself. But then it's not the only way, I should say. I think it was also a quote, I think it's Mary Lau from the African continent, whose article I happened to read, and she gives 25 different methodologies. I googled, how can I find myself? Rashmi, today I can laugh about it, but there was this phase in life where I really wanted to do something. I didn't know what to do. So I kind of, then everybody started, any motivational speech you listen to, they would say, find who you are. So it's not easy. I am Malati, but that's not me. It's not me. So how do I find myself? I'm not lost. I'm here existing in the real world. But and I've known myself ever since I was kind of, born, I could say. So she lists out 25 different, 25 is just a number I'm saying, a lot of steps. I'm just saying it out of memory. I'm not quoting her. So she says, you find out what your interests are, you find out what your skills are, and then you find out what is it that you, inside us, there's always something that's constantly telling us, this is the way you have to go, but, we want to go this way, but, that inner voice always tells us to go this way. So take some time. All of these take some time. Note it down. Note it down. So it's a practice that you have to do constantly, then come back where you started, goes in circles. But then eventually, you do find yourself. You don't have to be very spiritual or very religious, is what she says. But I think it really helped me to speeden up the process, having a guru and having those practices, because it brings a certain discipline in you. It brings a certain routine. It brings, Rashmi, it's the faith. It's at the core of it. It's the faith you have that you will find something. You will find the real you. And steps have been given to me, and it's I have to do it. It's my effort. It's only me who can find me. I think the faith in the higher powers or in my God really.
You know, you took me back to Kung Fu Panda, where the line. The recurring line in the film, I think it's part two or part three, I don't remember, where the recurring line is finding the me in me. And when I was watching this film, I realized most animated films are for us adults and for children. But behind me in the theater, I found a very little voice saying, oh my God, it's so interesting, no, finding the me in me. So when it was break time, I turned to see who it was. And it was two, like, five-year-olds who were repeating the line. So today, when you're talking about it on finding the true you, it makes complete sense that the journey begins, the lines come, the words come to you from which source God. But I think somewhere the lines stay with you. And I'm curious at this point, Malti, how did Bogia come into existence? What does it mean? Where did the name come from? And please tell us a lot more about it.
Yeah, thank you so much. You seem to be asking all kinds of questions that are really close to my heart. Well, I said I started off with this empowerment, especially for the mothers. And then I also wanted to understand how the women leaders are doing whatever they are doing. Do they have any struggles? Do they have any conflicts and things like that? So, you know, I gave this speech once about, it was a Women's Day program. It was a program for women leaders and talking about women empowerment. You know, that was a time when I was just coming out of my, you know, the difficult phases in life. Somebody asked me if you would like to give a speech. I was so hesitant, Rashmi. I was literally, you know, it was just a question. They did not invite me already to give a speech. They just said, do you want to? It's an opportunity. But then I was shivering. I was so totally cold in my feet. I said, no. I didn't tell them. I just told myself, no, I don't think I can do this. But then the next day, I wrote to them, I'm going to talk about internal empowerment of women. And they were shocked. What is this internal empowerment? I said, you'll hear me out. So this is what I say, you know, I have put my mind to it. I have now given a commitment, you know, from where I cannot go back. So that speech was received very, very well it was predominantly a German audience. Somebody came up to me and said, have you already written a book? I was like, my God. So I came back home, and then I do a lot of self-talk. Not that somebody can see me, but then it's always there in the back of my mind. I do a lot of self-talk. I have my conversations with God. And then I started one day, I said, okay, is it true? Whatever I spoke in that speech, is it true? I wanted to really find out if that was indeed true. So that's when I started my podcast with the women leaders. It's called The Impressive Empress. And I'm so happy that Neeraja was one of the speakers there. I have now spoken to about 21 different women from various walks of life. And I'm so totally enjoying this conversations with women, understanding what makes the person do. I mean, these are women who are creating a lot of impact in the society. And they are like the hidden gems. It's not that they are doing this for some award or something like that. Of course, coincidentally, they get recognized, but that's not their primary purpose. So I talked to these women, and the journey has been amazing. And then at one point of time, I realized I think I needed to do more. It's not just giving speeches that's going to help. I wanted to reach a broader audience. My health wouldn't permit me to, at that point of time, to move, to travel a lot, and I don't enjoy traveling so much, Rashmi. But then I had to find a way through which I could reach more people. And obviously, by God's grace, I was, I think, literally handed over on a platter the idea for Bhogya. So that's when, about 4 years back, the idea was born. And I was so totally new to developing a website and things. I knew zero about it. I'm not ashamed to say that, because I think oftentimes we always think that you have to know everything before you start anything. But Rashmi, I would say I started with zero knowledge. I would bug a friend of mine as to what is a website? You know, for us, it's like, it's all there. Today we can, you know, we Google and we can visit so many websites. But then how do I create a website? How I wanted to do it all by myself so that, you know, I understand the nuances, I understand the tricks of the trade. It is quite challenging. It's nothing comes easy in life. I constantly say that to everyone, my children especially, nothing comes easy in life, but if you want to, you will achieve it. So that's how Bhogya was born. Bhogya's idea is all about ways in which Sanatana Dharma can help one have a harmonious life and leave a world that's going to be very good for generations to come, not just for our children and grandchildren, but not going down the line. So that's the idea for Bhogya. And it's still taking very baby steps now.
And as far as Indian culture is concerned, is there any way, anything that you're doing out there in Germany to make sure that at least the Indians there are aware of what culture we come from?
That's something that I don't have to do specifically, Rashmi, because we have today the population, if I have to say, in the area that I live, it's like 68,000 Indians. It's the greater Frankfurt area. It has 68,000 Indians. And we have Indians from all over India. And we have Indian associations there. And we have a lot of these cultural festivities that happen. But my work with Bhogya is to highlight such events. And I also work with some of the artists who travel from India. And we try to organize some concerts or dance shows for them here. That's one support that I offer. And yes, Bhogya, we also bring a lot of workshops from people who are practicing the different art forms. You know, in India, we have 64 different art forms. And if anybody wants to offer any classes or workshops, we provide them a platform through which they can reach the expat Indians in Europe.
Okay, so when you say 64 different art forms, what kind of art forms are you talking
about? It encompasses everything, Rashmi. It's from the music, dance, theater, uh-huh. Okay. Turanguli, or mimicry, or chanting, speaking, poetry, everything. So, okay. So there are, even archery is considered one of that. Magic is considered one of that. Yeah. So we ran during Rashmi ran a series called Samarpanam, a gratitude to grandparents, with a lot of artists from across Europe. Sharing their art journey and actually attributing it to their grandparents. So that was wonderful. It's nice.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Because I think that generational connect somewhere is missing today. Before, there used to be proximity because people were not going out of the country. But now with literal distances, I think that generational gap is very evident. Because after a point, there's nothing common children have with grandparents to talk about. But there was a generation where there was a seamless conversation with grandparents. So this is beautiful. This is very beautiful, Malti. The pandemic, Malti, was one space where all of us went into hibernation. Literally, we were pushed into hibernation to pause and see what we are doing and what we intend to do in future, and if there is a future at all. And everyone took back some lesson from it. What were some of the reflections for you as far as the pandemic?
Pandemic, yes, it helped us all turn within. I think everybody probably did that at one point or the other. It was like doomsday. We didn't know when we would come out of it. But from our side, I'm also part of this chanting group called one of the founding members. It's called Parayanam Frankfurt. We are now like 14 years into it.
The Gita Parayanam or some other Parayanam?
So we do Vishnu Sahasranama Parayanam. We started with that. I mean, plus, of course, we do a whole lot of other things, totaling for an hour every weekend. Once a week, we used to meet. When this pandemic hit, we took it online. Thanks to the wonderful technologies we have, we could take it online, and we did a 48-day non-stop Vishnu Sahasranama Parayanam, and that kind of we do continue that online, as of course my husband is leading that. So he started off with teaching other shlokas, and now it's running to learning Bhagavad Gita chanting. It's all online. But some of the lessons that we learned is, I think you should never give up in life. I think, you need to stay course. Once you're committed to something, you need to stay course. Yes, you could take a pause. I had to take a pause because my health had taken a beating, and I had to take a pause. But personally, for me, during the COVID time, a lot of good things had happened. My daughter got married, and I have become a grandmother. And those were wonderful times, but also the health took a beating. So you need to realize that one cannot go on. So though it is a socio-cultural entrepreneurship that I'm doing right now, I had just begun. My other business of export is still happening. But one needs to realize that taking a pause is okay. It's a race, but it's a race against what, against who, and that's something that we need to answer to ourselves. And having that clarity kind of helped me to say, okay, I mean, things are not going the way it should, but it's still okay. So that was one of the main takeaways for me. And
So you said it was a race. It was a race for you with your past self, the current self, and the future self. What was the race for you? Each one of us, like you said, has our own questions. But for you, where was the race, and what was the race you were on?
I mean, it's always a race that one wants to achieve certain things in a certain period of time. So we have certain short-term and long-term goals. But for me, like I said, Sanatana Dharma has shown that one aspires to have four different goals: dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And as a society, or globally, we seem to be more focused only on two of these, which are the artha and kama. And there's a lot of artha is the material pursuits, and kama is the desires. My practices, thankfully to my gurus, taught me that if you add a magic ingredient to these other two goals of material pursuit and the desire of the sensual pleasures, it leads you to the fourth and the ultimate goal of moksha, which is liberation, or getting out of this circle of life and death. And this magic ingredient is called dharma. So the minute you put dharma, you add dharma to artha or to kama, you can be rest assured that you are on a safe path to success. Success that is sustainable success. It's not, and that will lead you to your higher purpose. So it is all intertwined, and it's just that I love enjoying. I mean, I'm totally enjoying these scriptural studies, which help me stay on course, stay aligned to my purpose. So I'm really grateful for that.
Wow. This is so beautifully said. So kama, artha, moksha, dharma, all these are terms for a lot of us. And thank you. Thank you for simplifying it and bringing it in to say how we can incorporate it in our everyday existence. So as we are leaving, Malti, three life lessons that you would like to leave us with.
When I rediscovered the new me, The very first thing that I thought I should focus on was motherhood. So my first life lesson is, as a mother, I think we need to make sure that we impart our children with venerable values so that they can have a vibrant and valiant life. So that would be my first and foremost lesson for every woman who's a mother there. You know, in this global conference, there was a very interesting speech given by the Minister of Culture. When we say mother or motherhood, we only think of a woman. But, you know, within us, within every individual, we have this both feminine and masculine qualities in all of us. At various points of time in our lives, one or the other of us will be at a higher level than the other. For a woman, it's natural that she has more of the feminine qualities, but we have also seen a lot of men having these feminine qualities. There's nothing wrong in that. That's why we see a lot of men, sometimes more than the woman, like in a family, sometimes more than the mother, the father would be taking such a beautiful care of the baby or the kids. Today, when you have to live as an expat, you know, I'm so proud and so happy to see a lot of young parents both contribute equally to the family system. Each one, you know, they have their duties divided, and they take care of the child very well. So it's when I say the mother, it's the motherhood that I'm talking about. It's not just the mother, the woman. The man can also contribute in that, but the important point is that, you know, we need to impart these lessons. For me, a purpose is very important. Having a purpose in life, you know, you can have short-term goals, but you must have a higher purpose, because I think without a plan or a goal, whatever efforts we take will not be purposed in the right direction. So to have a clear direction, I think a purpose is required. You know, just like when we travel by car, you know, in Europe, it's very common to go from place A to place B by car. So as soon as we enter the car, we give the address and then we take the route shown by the navigation, the Google Maps or whatever it could be. So similarly, in life, you need to fix your goal and then learn to navigate. Unless you have this goal, you will not know where you're going. And once you have this goal, you need to get the job done and do it well with, Rashmi, I'm going to give you an acronym, FEE. Without FEE, you know, like I say, anything that comes free is not so valued. But when you pay a fee, it gains more value. And this fee is focus, energy, and enthusiasm. Pay your fee, your job will get done well. So those are my lessons, Rashmi. I hope people find it useful. I found it useful. I have personally used this, and I hope the listeners will too.
Wow, this is so beautiful, so amazing. I think just being conscious of the fee you are paying and how you're making a difference makes a big difference in how the world reflects back to you. Thank you so very much, Malti, for this amazing conversation. It was such a pleasure hosting you on You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Your dreams with Bhogya and whatever you set out to achieve as a result of it all come true. All the very best. And if there's any way I can be of any assistance, I'd be really happy to be part of that journey. All the best on your journey and stay blessed. Continue inspiring.
Thank you so much, Rashmi, for having me on the show. Denzel Washington said, "Don't aspire for anything. Aspire to make a difference." I'm happy to be able to do that. And I am also grateful for the divine grace that stays with me all the time. Thanks once again, Rashmi, for having me on the show. It was lovely talking to you and sharing my experiences.
Likewise, Malti. Take care. Bye. With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. Come, let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.